When the group they were following eventually stopped outside a large metal door marked with the ancient radiation symbol, Holden and Miller slipped off to the side and hid behind a large planter filled with ferns and a couple of stunted trees. Holden watched the fake riot cops order everyone into the shelter and then seal the door behind them with a swipe of a card. All but one of them left, the remaining one standing guard outside the door. Miller whispered, "Let's ask him to let us in." "Follow my lead," Holden replied, then stood up and began walking toward the guard.
"Hey, shithead, you're supposed to be in a shelter or in the casino, so get the fuck back to your group," the guard said, his hand on the butt of his gun.
Holden held up his hands placatingly, smiled, and kept walking.
"Hey, I lost my group. Got mixed up somehow. I'm not from here, you know," he said.
The guard pointed down the corridor with the stun baton in his left hand.
"Go that way till you hit the ramps down," he said.
Miller seemed to appear out of nowhere in the dimly lit corridor, his gun already out and pointed at the guard's head. He thumbed off the safety with an audible click.
"How about we just join the group already inside?" he said. "Open it up."
The guard looked at Miller out of the corners of his eyes, not turning his head at all. His hands went up, and he dropped the baton.
"You don't want to do that, man," the fake cop said.
"I kind of think he does," Holden said.
"You should do what he says. He's not a very nice person."
Miller pushed the barrel of his gun against the guard's head and said,
"You know what we used to call a no-brainer back at the station house? It's when a shot to the head actually blows the entire brain out of someone's skull. It usually happens when a gun is pressed to the victim's head right about here. The gas has got nowhere to go. Pops the brain right out through the exit wound."
"They said not to open these up once they'd been sealed, man," the guard said, speaking so fast he ran all the words together. "They were pretty serious about that."
"This is the last time I ask," Miller said. "Next time, I just use the card I took off your body."
Holden turned the guard around to face the door and pulled the handgun out of the man's belt holster. He hoped all Miller's threats were just threats. He suspected they weren't.
"Just open the door and we'll let you go, I promise," Holden said to the guard.
The guard nodded and moved up to the door, then slid his card through it and punched in a number on the keypad. The heavy blast door slid open. Beyond it, the room was even darker than the corridor outside. A few emergency LEDs glowed a sullen red. In the faint illumination, Holden could see dozens, hundreds of bodies scattered across the floor, unmoving.
"Are they dead?"
Holden asked.
"I don't know nothing about," the guard said, but Miller cut him off. "You go in first," Miller said, and pushed the guard forward.
"Hold on," Holden said. "I don't think it's a good idea to just charge in there."
Three things happened at once. The guard took four steps forward and then collapsed on the floor. Miller sneezed once, loudly, and then started to sway drunkenly. And both Holden's and Miller's hand terminals began an angry electric buzzing. Miller staggered back and said,
"The door!"
Holden hit the button, and the door slid shut again.
"Gas," Miller said, then coughed. "There's gas in there."
While the ex-cop leaned against the corridor wall and coughed, Holden took out his terminal to shut off the buzzing. But the alarm flashing on his screen wasn't an air contamination alert. It was the venerable three wedge shapes pointing inward. Radiation. As he watched, the symbol, which should have been white, shifted through an angry orange color to dark red. Miller was looking at his too, his expression unreadable.
"We've been dosed," Holden said. I've never actually seen the detector activate,
Miller said, his voice rough and faint after his coughing fit.
What does it mean when the thing is red?
It means we'll be bleeding from our rectums in about 6 hours, Holden said. We have to get to the ship. It'll have the meds we need.
What? Miller said. The fuck is going on?
Holden grabbed Miller by the arm and led him back down the corridor toward the ramps. Holden's skin felt warm and itchy. He didn't know if it was radiation burn or psychosomatic. With the amount of radiation he'd just taken, it was a good thing he had sperm tucked away in Montana and on Europa. Thinking that made his balls itch.
They nuke the station, Holden said.
Hell, maybe they just pretend to nuke it. Then they drag everyone down here and toss them into radiation shelters that are only radioactive on the inside. Gas them to keep them quiet.
There are easier ways to kill people,
Miller said, his breathing coming in ragged gasps as they ran down the corridor.
So it has to be more than that, Holden said. The bug, right? The one that killed that girl. It fed on radiation.
Incubators, Miller said, nodding in agreement.
They arrived at one of the ramps to the lower levels, but a group of citizens led by two fake riot cops were coming up. Holden grabbed Miller and pulled him to one side, where they could hide in the shadow of a closed noodle shop.
So, they infected them, right? Holden said in a whisper, waiting for the group to pass.
Maybe fake radiation meds with the bug in it. Maybe that brown goo just spread around on the floor.
Then, whatever was in the girl, Julie.
He stopped when Miller walked away from him, straight at the group that had just come up the ramp.
Officer, said Miller to one of the fake cops.
They both stopped, and one of them said,
You're supposed to be...
Miller shot him in the throat, right below the helmet's faceplate. Then he swiveled smoothly and shot the other guard in the inside of the thigh, just below the groin. When the man fell backward, yelling in pain, Miller walked up and shot him again, this time in the neck. A couple of the citizens started screaming. Miller pointed his gun at them and they got quiet.
Go down a level or two and find some place to hide, he said. Do not cooperate with these men, even though they're dressed like police. They do not have your best interests at heart. Go.
The citizens hesitated, then ran.
Miller took a few cartridges out of his pocket and began replacing the three he'd fired.
Holden started to speak, but Miller cut him off.
Take the throat shot if you can. Most people, the faceplate and chest armor don't quite cover the gap. If the neck is covered, then shoot the inside of the thigh. Very thin armor there. Mobility issue. Takes most people down in one shot.
Holden nodded as though that all made sense.
Okay, Holden said. Say, let's get back to the ship before we bleed to death, right? No more shooting people if we can help it.
His voice sounded calmer than he felt. Miller slapped the magazine back into his gun and chambered a round.
I'm guessing there's a lot more people need to be shot before this is over, he said. But sure. First things first.
Chapter 28. Miller. The first time Miller killed anyone was in his third year working security. He'd been 22, just married, talking about having kids. As the new guy on the contract, he'd gotten the shit jobs, patrolling levels so high the Coriolis made him seasick, taking domestic disturbance calls in holes no wider than a storage bin, standing guard on the drunk tank to keep predators from raping the unconscious. The normal hazing. He'd known to expect it. He'd thought he could take it. The call had been from an illegal restaurant almost at the mass center. At less than a tenth of a G, Gravity had been little more than a suggestion, and his inner ear had been confused and angered by the change in spin. If he thought about it, he could still remember the sound of raised voices, too fast and slurred for words, the smell of bathtub cheese, the thin haze of smoke from the cheap electric griddle. It had happened fast. The perp had come out of the hole with a gun in one hand, dragging a woman by the hair with the other. Miller's partner, a 10-year veteran named Carson, had shouted out the warning. The perp had turned, swinging the gun out at arm's length like a stuntman in a video. All through training, the instructors had said that you couldn't know what you'd do until the moment came. Killing another human being was hard. Some people couldn't. The perp's gun came around. The gunman dropped the woman and shouted. It turned out that, for Miller at least, it wasn't all that hard. Afterward, he'd been through mandatory counseling. He'd cried. He'd suffered the nightmares and the shakes and all the things that cops suffered quietly and didn't talk about. But even then, it seemed to be happening at a distance, like he'd gotten too drunk and was watching himself throw up. It was just a physical reaction. It would pass. The important thing was he knew the answer to the question. Yes, if he needed to, he could take a life. It wasn't until now, walking through the corridors of Eros, that he'd taken joy in it. Even taking down the poor bastard in that first firefight had felt like the sad necessity of work. Pleasure in killing hadn't come until after Julie. And it wasn't really pleasure as much as a brief cessation of pain. He held the gun low. Holden started down the ramp, and Miller followed, letting the earther take point. Holden walked faster than he did, and with the uncommented athleticism of someone who lived in a wide variety of gravities. Miller had the feeling he'd made Holden nervous, and he regretted that a little. He hadn't intended to, and he really needed to get aboard Holden's ship if he was going to find Julie's secrets. Or, for that matter, not die of radiation sickness in the next few hours. That seemed a finer point than it probably was. Okay, Holden said at the bottom of the ramp. We need to get back down, and there are a lot of guards between us and Naomi that are going to be really confused by two guys walking the wrong direction. That's a problem, Miller agreed. Any thoughts? Miller frowned and considered the flooring. The Eros floors were different than Ceres's. Laminate with flecks of gold. Tubes aren't going to be running, he said. If they are, it'll be in lockdown mode, where it only stops at the holding pen down in the casino. So, that's out. Maintenance corridor again? If we can find one that goes between levels, Miller said. Might be a little tricky, but it seems like a better bet than shooting our way past a couple dozen assholes in armor. How long have we got before your friend takes off? Holden looked at his hand terminal. The radiation alarm was still deep red. Miller wondered how long those took to reset. A little more than 2 hours, Holden said. Shouldn't be a problem. Let's see what we can find, Miller said. The corridors nearest the radiation shelters, the death traps, the incubators, had been emptied. Wide passages built to accommodate the ancient construction equipment that had carved Eros into a human habitation were eerie with only Holden's and Miller's footsteps and the hum of the air recyclers. Miller hadn't noticed when the emergency announcements had stopped, but the absence of them now seemed ominous. If it had been Ceres, he would have known where to go, where everything led, how to move gracefully from one stage to another. On Eros, all he had was an educated guess. That wasn't so bad. But he could tell it was taking too long. And worse than that, they weren't talking about it. Neither one spoke. They were walking more slowly than normal. It wasn't up to the threshold of consciousness, but Miller knew that both of their bodies were starting to feel the radiation damage. It wasn't going to get better.
Okay, Holden said. Somewhere around here, there has to be a maintenance shaft.
Could also try the tube station, Miller said. The cars run in vacuum, but there might be some service tunnels running parallel.
Don't you think they'd have shut those down as part of the big roundup?
Probably, Miller said. Hey, you two! What the fuck you think you're doing up here?
Miller looked back over his shoulder. Two men in riot gear were waving at them menacingly. Holden said something sharp under his breath. Miller narrowed his eyes. The thing was, these men were amateurs. The beginning of an idea moved in the back of Miller's mind as he watched the two approach. Killing them and taking their gear wouldn't work. There was nothing like scorch marks and blood to make it clear something had happened. But,
Miller, Holden said, a warning in his voice.
Yeah, Miller said, I know.
I said, what the fuck are you two doing here?
One of the security men said.
The station's on lockdown. Everyone goes down to the casino level or up to the radiation shelters.
We were just looking for a way to, get down to the casino level,
Holden said, smiling and being non-threatening.
We're not from around here, and...
The closer of the two guards jabbed the butt of his rifle neatly into Holden's leg. The earther staggered, and Miller shot the guard just below the faceplate, then turned to the one still standing, mouth agape.
You're Mikey Coe, right?
Miller said. The man's face went even paler, but he nodded. Holden groaned and stood.
Detective Miller, Miller said. Busted you on Ceres about 4 years ago. You got a little happy in a bar. Tappan's, I think. Hit a girl with a pool cue.
Oh, hey, the man said with a frightened smile.
Yeah, I remember you. How you been doing?
Good and bad, Miller said. You know how it is. Give the earther your gun.
Coe looked from Miller to Holden and back, licking his lips and judging his chances. Miller shook his head.
Seriously, Miller said. Give him the gun.
Sure, yeah, no problem.
This was the kind of man who'd killed Julie, Miller thought. Stupid, short-sighted, a man born with a sense for raw opportunity where his soul should have been. Miller's mental Julie shook her head in disgust and sorrow, and Miller found himself wondering if she meant the thug now handing his rifle to Holden, or himself. Maybe both.
What's the deal here, Mikey?
Miller asked.
What do you mean?
The guard said, playing stupid, like they were in an interrogation cell, stalling for time. Walking through the old script of cop and criminal as if it still made sense, as if everything hadn't changed. Miller was surprised by a tightness in his throat. He didn't know what it was there for.
The job, he said. What's the job?
I don't know.
Hey, Miller said gently, I just killed your buddy.
And that's his third today, Holden said. I saw him.
Miller could see it in the man's eyes. The cunning, the shift, the move from one strategy to another. It was old and familiar and as predictable as water moving down.
Hey, Coe said, it's just a job. They told us about a year ago we were making a big move, right? But no one knows what it is. So a few months back, they start moving guys over, training us up like we were cops, you know?
Who was training you?
Miller said.
The last guys. The ones who were working the contract before us, Coe said.
Protogen?
Something like that, yeah, he said. Then they took off and we took over. Just muscle, you know. Some smuggling.
Smuggling what?
All kinds of shit.
Ko said. He was starting to feel safe, and it showed in the way he held himself and the way he spoke. Surveillance equipment, communication arrays, Sirius is Fox servers with their own little gel software wonks already built in. Scientific equipment, too. Stuff for checking the water and the air and shit. And these ancient remote-access robots like you'd use in a vacuum dig. All sorts of shit. Where was it going to? Holden asked. Here, Ko said, gesturing to the air, the stone, the station. It's all here. They were like months installing it all. And then for weeks, nothing.
What do you mean, nothing?
Miller asked. Nothing, nothing. All this build-up, and then we sat around with our thumbs up our butts. Something had gone wrong. The Phoebe bug hadn't made its rendezvous. But then Julie had come, Miller thought, and the game had turned back on. He saw her again, as if he were in her apartment. The long, spreading tendrils of whatever the hell it was. The bone spurs pressing out against her skin. The black froth of filament pouring from her eyes. The pay's good, though, Ko said philosophically. And was kind of nice taking some time off. Miller nodded in agreement, leaned close, tucking the barrel of his gun through the interleaving of armor at Ko's belly, and shot him. What the fuck? Holden said as Miller put his gun into his jacket pocket.
What did you think was going to happen?
Miller said, squatting down beside the gut-shot man. It's not like he was going to let us go.
Yeah, okay, Holden said, but help me get him up, Miller said, hooking an arm behind Ko's shoulder.
Ko shrieked when Miller lifted him.
What? Get his other side, Miller said. Man needs medical attention, right?
Yes, Holden said.
So get his other side.
It wasn't as far back to the radiation shelters as Miller had expected, which had its good points and its bad ones. On the upside, Ko was still alive and screaming. The chances were better that he'd be lucid, which wasn't what Miller had intended. But as they came near the first group of guards, Ko's babbling seemed scattered enough to work.
Hey, Miller shouted, some help over here.
At the head of the ramp, four of the guards looked at one another and then started moving toward them, curiosity winning out over basic operating procedures. Holden was breathing hard. Miller was too. Ko wasn't that heavy. It was a bad sign.
What the hell is this? One of the guards said. There's a bunch of people holed up back there, Miller said. Resistance. I thought you people swept this level.
That wasn't our job, the guy said. We're just making sure the groups from the casino get to the shelters.
Well, someone screwed up, Miller snapped. You have transport?
The guards looked at each other again.
We can call for one, a guy at the back said.
Never mind, Miller said. You boys go find the shooters.
Wait a minute, the first guy said. Exactly who the hell are you?
The installers from Protogen, Holden said. We're replacing the sensors that failed. This guy was supposed to help us.
I didn't hear about that, the leader said.
Miller dug a finger under Ko's armor and squeezed. Ko shrieked and tried to writhe away from him.
Talk to your boss about it in your own time, Miller said. Come on, let's get this asshole to a medic.
Hold on,
the first guard said, and Miller sighed. Four of them. If he dropped Ko and jumped for cover, but there wasn't much cover. And who the hell knew what Holden would do?
Where are the shooters?
The guard asked. Miller kept himself from smiling.
There's a hole about a quarter click anti-spinward, Miller said. The other one's body's still there. You can't miss it.
Miller turned down the ramp. Behind him, the guards were talking among themselves, debating what to do, who to call, who to send.
You're completely insane, Holden said over Coe's semi-conscious weeping. Maybe he was right.
When, Miller wondered, does someone stop being human?
There had to be a moment, some decision that you made. And before it, you were one person, and after it, someone else.
Walking down through the levels of Eros, Coe's bleeding body slung between him and Holden, Miller reflected. He was probably dying of radiation damage. He was lying his way past half a dozen men who were only letting him by because they were used to people being scared of them, and he wasn't. He had killed 3 people in the last 2 hours. 4, if he counted Coe. Probably safer to say 4, then. The analytical part of his mind, the small, still voice he had cultivated for years, watched him move and replayed all his decisions. Everything he'd done had made perfect sense at the time. Shooting Coe, shooting the other 3, leaving the safety of the crew's hideout to investigate the evacuation. Emotionally, it had all been obvious at the time. It was only when he considered it from outside that it seemed dangerous. If he'd seen it in someone else, Mus, Havelock, Simatimba, he wouldn't have taken more than a minute to realize they'd gone off the rails. Since it was him, he had taken longer to notice. But Holden was right. Somewhere along the line, he'd lost himself. He wanted to think it had been finding Julie, seeing what had happened to her body, knowing he hadn't been able to save her. But that was only because it seemed like the sentimental moment. The truth was, his decisions before then, leaving Ceres to go on a wild hunt for Julie, drinking himself out of a career, remaining a cop for even a day after that first kill all those years earlier, none of them seemed to make sense, viewed objectively. He'd lost a marriage to a woman he'd loved once. He'd lived hip-deep in the worst humanity had to offer. He'd learned firsthand that he was capable of killing another human being. And nowhere along the line could he say that there, at that moment, he had been a sane, whole man, and that afterward, he hadn't. Maybe it was a cumulative process, like smoking cigarettes. One didn't do much. 5 didn't do much more. Every emotion he'd shut down, every human contact he'd spurned, every love and friendship and moment of compassion from which he'd turned, had taken him a degree away from himself. Until now, he'd been able to kill men with impunity, to face his impending death with a denial that let him make plans and take action. In his mind, Julia Mao tilted her head, listening to his thoughts. In his mind, she held him, her body against his in a way that was more comforting than erotic, consoling, forgiving. This was why he had searched for her. Julie had become the part of him that was capable of human feeling, the symbol of what he could have been if he hadn't been this. There was no reason to think his imagined Julie had anything in common with the real woman. Meeting her would have been a disappointment for them both. He had to believe that, the same way he'd had to believe everything that had cut him off from love before. Holden stopped, the body, corpse now, of Coe tugging Miller back to himself.
What? Miller said.
Holden nodded at the access panel in front of them. Miller looked at it, uncomprehending, and then recognized it. They'd made it. They were back at the hideout.
Are you all right? Holden said.
Yeah, Miller said. Just wool gathering. Sorry.
He dropped Ko, and the thug slid to the floor with a sad thud. Miller's arm had fallen asleep. He shook it, but the tingling didn't go away. A wave of vertigo and nausea passed through him. Symptoms, he thought.
How'd we do for time?
Miller asked.
We're a little past deadline. 5 minutes. It'll be fine, Holden said and slid the door open.
The space beyond, where Naomi and Alex and Amos had been, was empty.
Fuck me, Holden said.
Chapter 29. Holden.
Fuck me, Holden said.
And a moment later, they left us. No, she had left him. Naomi had said she would. But confronted with the reality of it, Holden realized that he hadn't really believed her. But here it was, the proof, the empty space where she used to be. His heart hammered and his throat tightened, breath coming in gasps. The sick feeling in his gut was either despair or his colon sloughing off its lining. He was going to die, sitting outside a cheap hotel on Eros, because Naomi had done exactly what she'd said she would, what he himself had ordered her to do. His resentment refused to listen to reason.
We're dead, he said,
and sat down on the edge of a fern-filled planter.
How long do we have?
Miller asked, looking up and down the corridor while he fidgeted with his gun.
No idea,
Holden replied, gesturing vaguely at his terminal's flashing red radiation symbol.
Hours before we really start to feel it, I think. But I don't know. God, I wish Shed was still here.
Shed?
Friend of mine, Holden said, not feeling up to elaborating. Good med tech.
Call her, Miller said.
Holden looked at his terminal and tapped the screen a few times. Network's still down, he said.
All right, Miller said. Let's go to your ship. See if it's still in dock.
They'll be gone. Naomi's keeping the crew alive. She warned me, but I...
So let's go anyway, Miller said.
He was shifting from one foot to the other and looking down the corridor as he spoke.
Miller,
Holden said, then stopped. Miller was clearly on edge, and he'd shot four people. Holden was increasingly frightened of the former cop. As if reading his mind, Miller stepped close, the two-meter man towering over him where he sat. Miller smiled ruefully, his eyes unnervingly gentle. Holden would almost have preferred they be threatening.
Way I see it, there's three ways this can go, Miller said. One, we find your ship still in dock, get the meds we need, and maybe we live. Two, we try to get to the ship, and along the way we run into a bunch of mafia thugs, die gloriously in a hail of bullets. Three, we sit here and leak out of our eyes and assholes.
Holden said nothing. He just stared up at the cop and frowned.
I'm liking the first two better than the last one,
Miller said. His voice made it sound like an apology.
How about you come with?
Holden laughed before he could catch himself, but Miller didn't look like he was taking offense.
Sure, Holden said. I just needed to feel sorry for myself for a minute. Let's go get killed by the mafia.
He said it with much more bravado than he felt. The truth was, he didn't want to die. Even during his time in the Navy, the idea of dying in the line of duty had always seemed distant and unreal. His ship would never be destroyed, and if it was, he would make it to the escape shuttle. The universe without him in it didn't make any sense at all. He'd taken risks, he'd seen other people die, even people he loved. Now, for the first time, his own death was a real thing. He looked at the cop. He'd known the man less than a day, didn't trust him, and wasn't sure he much liked him. And this was who he'd die with. Holden shuddered and stood up, pulling his gun out of his waistband. Under the panic and fear, there was a deep feeling of calm. He hoped it would last.
"After you," Holden said. "If we make it, remind me to call my mother's."
The casinos were a powder keg waiting for a match. If the evacuation sweeps had been even moderately successful, there were probably a million or more people crammed into three levels of the station. Hard-looking men in riot gear moved through the crowds, telling everyone to stay put until they were taken to the radiation shelters, keeping the crowd frightened. Every now and then, a small group of citizens would be led away. Knowing where they were going made Holden's stomach burn. He wanted to yell out that the cops were fake, that they were killing people. But a riot with this many people in such a confined space would have been a meat grinder. Maybe that was inevitable, but he wasn't going to be the one to start it. Someone else did. Holden could hear raised voices, the angry rumble of the mob, followed by the electronically amplified voice of someone in a riot helmet yelling for people to get back, and then a gunshot, a brief pause, then a fusillade. People screamed. The entire crowd around Holden and Miller surged in two opposing directions, some of the people rushing toward the sound of the conflict, but many more of them running away from it. Holden spun in the current of bodies. Miller reached out and grabbed the back of his shirt, gripping it in his fist and yelling for Holden to stay close. About a dozen meters down the corridor, in a coffee shop seating area separated by a waist-high black iron fence, one of the mafia thugs had been cut off from his group by a dozen citizens. Gun drawn, he was backing up and yelling at them to move aside. They kept advancing, their faces wild with the drunken frenzy of mob violence. The mafia thug fired once, and one small body staggered forward, then fell to the ground at the thug's feet. Holden couldn't tell if it was a boy or a girl, but they couldn't be more than 13 or 14 years old. The thug moved forward, looking down at the small, thin figure at his feet, and pointed his gun at them again. It was too much. Holden found himself running down the corridor toward the thug, gun drawn and screaming for people to get out of the way. When he was about 7 meters away, the crowd split apart enough for him to begin firing. Half his shots went wild, hitting the coffee shop counter and walls, one round blowing a stack of ceramic plates into the air. But a few of them hit the thug, staggering him back. Holden vaulted the waist-high metal fence and came to a sliding halt about 3 meters from the fake cop and his victim. Holden's gun fired one last time, and then the slide locked in the open position to let him know it was empty. The thug didn't fall down. He straightened up, looked down at his torso, and then looked up and pointed his gun at Holden's face. Holden had time to count the 3 bullets that were smashed against the heavy chest armor of the thug's riot gear. "Die gloriously in a hail of bullets," he thought. The thug said, "Stupid motherfuck," and his head snapped back in a spray of red. He slumped to the floor.
"Gap at the neck, remember?"
Miller said from behind him.
"Chest armor's too thick for a pistol."
Suddenly dizzy, Holden bent over at the waist, gasping for air. He tasted lemon at the back of his throat, and swallowed twice to stop himself from throwing up. He was afraid it would be full of blood and stomach lining. He didn't need to see that.
"Thanks,"
he gasped out, turning his head toward Miller. Miller just nodded vaguely in his direction, then walked over to the guard and nudged him with one foot. Holden stood up and looked around the corridor, waiting for the inevitable wave of vengeful mafia enforcers to come crashing down on them. He didn't see any. He and Miller were standing in a quiet island of calm in the midst of Armageddon. All around them, tendrils of violence were whipping into high gear. People were running in every direction. The mafia goons were yelling and booming amplified voices and punctuating the threats with periodic gunfire. But there were only hundreds of them, and there were many thousands of angry and panicked civilians. Miller gestured at the chaos.
"This is what happens," he said. "Give a bunch of yahoos the equipment and they think they know what they're doing."
Holden crouched beside the fallen child. It was a boy, maybe 13, with Asian features and dark hair. His chest had a gaping wound in it, blood trickling out instead of gushing. He didn't have a pulse that Holden could find. Holden picked him up anyway, looking around for some place to take him.
"He's dead," Miller said as he replaced the cartridge he'd fired.
"Go to hell. We don't know. If we can get him to the ship, maybe..."
Miller shook his head, a sad but distant expression on his face as he looked at the child in Holden's arms.
"He took high caliber round to the center of mass," Miller said. "He's gone."
"Fuck me," Holden said.
"You keep saying that."
A bright neon sign flashed above the corridor that led out of the casino levels and onto the ramps down to the docks. "Thank you for playing," it read, and "You're always a winner on Eros." Below it, two ranks of men in heavy combat armor blocked the way. They might have given up on crowd control in the casinos, but they weren't letting anyone go. Holden and Miller crouched behind an overturned coffee cart 100 meters from the soldiers. As they watched, a dozen or so people made a dash toward the guards and were summarily mowed down by machine gun fire, then fell to the deck beside those who had tried before.
"I count 34 of them," Miller said. "How many can you handle?"
Holden spun to look at him in surprise, but Miller's face told him the former cop was joking.
"Kidding aside, how do we get past that?" Holden said. 30 men with machine guns and a clear line of sight. No cover to speak of for the last 20 meters or so," Miller said. "We don't get past that."
Chapter 30. Miller. They sat on the floor with their backs to a bank of pachinko machines no one was playing, watching the ebb and flow of the violence around them like it was a soccer game. Miller's hat was perched on his bent knee. He felt the vibration against his back when one of the displays cycled through its dupe call. The lights glittered and glowed. Holden, beside him, was breathing hard like he'd run a race. Out beyond them, like something from Hieronymus Bosch, the casino levels of Eros prepared for death. The riot's momentum had spent itself for now. Men and women gathered together in small groups. Guards strode through, threatening and scattering any bunch that got too large or unruly. Something was burning fast enough that the air scrubbers couldn't get out the smell of melting plastic. The Bhangra music mixed with weeping and screaming and wails of despair. Some idiot was shouting at one of the so-called cops. He was a lawyer. He was getting all of this on video. Whoever was responsible was going to be in big trouble. Miller watched a bunch of people start to gather around the confrontation. The guy in the riot gear listened, nodded, and shot the lawyer once in the kneecap. The crowd dispersed, except for one woman, the lawyer's wife or girlfriend, bent down over him screaming. And in the privacy of Miller's skull, everything slowly fell apart. He was aware of having two different minds. One was the Miller he was used to, familiar with, the one who was thinking about what was going to happen when he got out, what the next step would be in connecting the dots between Phoebe Station, Ceres, Eros, and Juliet Mao. How to work the case. That version of him was scanning the crowd the way he might have watched the line at a crime scene, waiting for some detail, some change to catch his attention. Send him in the right direction to solve the mystery. It was the short-sighted, idiotic part of him that couldn't conceive of his own personal extinction, and it thought surely, surely there was going to be an after. The other Miller was different, quieter. Sad, maybe, but at peace. He'd read a poem many years before called The Death Self, and he hadn't understood the term until now. A knot at the middle of his psyche was untying. All the energy he'd put into holding things together, Ceres, his marriage, his career, himself, was coming free. He'd shot and killed more men in the past day than in his whole career as a cop. He'd only started to realize that he'd actually fallen in love with the object of his search, after he knew for certain that he'd lost her. He'd seen unequivocally that the chaos he'd dedicated his life to holding at bay was stronger and wider and more powerful than he would ever be. No compromise he could make would be enough. His death self was unfolding in him. And the dark blooming took no effort. It was a relief, a relaxation, a long, slow exhale after decades of holding it in. He was in ruins, but it was okay, because he was dying. "Hey," Holden said. His voice was stronger than Miller had expected it might be.
"Yeah?
Did you ever watch Misko and Marisko when you were a kid?" Miller frowned.
"The kid show?" he asked.
"The one with the five dinosaurs and the evil guy in the big pink hat," Holden said, then started humming a bright, boppy tune. Miller closed his eyes and then started singing along. The music had had words once. Now it was only a series of rises and falls, runs up and down a major scale, with every dissonance resolved in the note that followed.
"Guess I must have," Miller said when they reached the end.
"I loved that show. I must have been 8 or 9 last time I saw it," Holden said. "Funny how that stuff stays with you."
"Yeah," Miller said.
He coughed, turned his head, and spat out something red.
"How are you holding together?"
"I think I'm okay," Holden said. Then a moment later, he added, "As long as I don't stand up."
"Nauseated?"
"Yeah, some."
"Me too."
"What is this?" Holden asked. "I mean, what the hell is this all about? Why are they doing this?" It was a fair question. Slaughtering Eros, slaughtering any station in the belt, was a pretty easy job. Anyone with first-year orbital mechanics skills could find a way to sling a rock big enough and fast enough to crack the station open. With the effort Protogen had put in, they could have killed the air supply, or drugged it, or whatever the hell they wanted to do. This wasn't a murder. This wasn't even a genocide. And then there was all the observation equipment. Cameras, communications arrays, air and water sensors. There were only two reasons for that kind of shit. Either the mad bastards at Protogen got off on watching people die, or...
"They don't know," Miller said.
"What?"
He turned to look at Holden. The first Miller, the detective, the optimist, the one who needed to know, was driving now. His death self didn't fight, because of course it didn't. It didn't fight anything. Miller raised his hand like he was giving a lecture to a rookie.
They don't know what it's about, or, you know, at least they don't know what's going to happen. This isn't even built like a torture chamber. It's all being watched, right? Water and air sensors. It's a petri dish. They don't know what that shit that killed Julie does. And this is how they're finding out.
Holden frowned.
Don't they have laboratories? Places where you could maybe put that crap on some animals or something? Because as experimental design goes, this seems a little messed up.
Maybe they need a really big sample size, Miller said. Or maybe it's not about the people. Maybe it's about what happens to the station.
There's a cheery thought, Holden said.
The Julie Mao in Miller's mind brushed a lock of hair out of her eyes. She was frowning, looking thoughtful, interested, concerned. It all had to make sense. It was like one of those basic orbital mechanics problems, where every hitch and veer seemed random until all the variables slipped into place. What had been inexplicable became inevitable. Julie smiled at him. Julie as she had been, as he imagined she had been. The Miller who hadn't resigned himself to death smiled back. And then she was gone, his mind shifting to the noise from the pachinko machines and the low, demonic wailing of the crowds. Another group, 20 men hunkered low like linebackers, made a rush toward the mercenaries guarding the opening to the port. The gunmen mowed them down.
If we had enough people, Holden said after the sound of machine guns fell away, we could make it. They couldn't kill all of us.
That's what the patrol goons are for, Miller said. Make sure no one can organize a big enough push. Keep stirring the pot.
But if it was a mob, I mean a really big mob, it could...
Maybe, Miller agreed.
Something in his chest clicked in a way it hadn't a minute before. He took a slow, deep breath, and the click happened again. He could feel it deep in his left lung.
At least Naomi got away, Holden said.
That is good.
She's amazing. She'd never put Amos and Alex in danger if she could help it. I mean, she's serious, professional, strong, you know? I mean, she's really, really...
Pretty, too, Miller said. Great hair. Love the eyes.
No, that wasn't what I meant, Holden said.
You don't think she's a good-looking woman?
She's my XO, Holden said. She's, you know,
off-limits.
Holden sighed.
She got away, didn't she? Holden asked.
Almost for sure.
They were silent. One of the linebackers coughed, stood up, and limped back into the casino, trailing blood from a hole in his ribs. The Bhangra gave way to an Afropop medley with a low, sultry voice singing in languages Miller didn't know.
She'd wait for us, Holden said. Don't you think she'd wait for us?
Almost for sure,
Miller's death self said, not particularly caring if it was a lie. He thought about it for a long moment, then turned to face Holden again.
Hey, just so you know it, I'm not exactly at my best right now.
Okay.
All right.
The glowing orange lockdown lights on the tube station across the level clicked to green. Miller sat forward, interested. His back felt sticky, but it was probably just sweat. Other people had noticed the change, too. Like a current in a water tank, the attention of the nearby crowds shifted from the mercenaries blocking the way to the port to the brushed steel doors of the tube station. The doors opened. and the first zombies appeared. Men and women, their eyes glassy and their muscles slack, stumbled out through the open doors. Miller had seen a documentary feed about hemorrhagic fevers as part of his training on Ceres Station. Their movements were the same. Listless, driven, autonomic. Like rabid dogs whose minds had already been given over to their disease.
"Hey," Miller said, his hand on Holden's shoulder. "Hey, it's happening."
An older man in a pair of emergency services scrubs approached the shambling newcomers. His hands were out before him, as if he could corral them by simple force of will. The first zombie in the pack turned empty eyes toward him and vomited up a spray of very familiar brown goo.
"Look," Holden said. "I saw. No, look."
All down the casino level, tube station lights were going off lockdown. Doors were opening. The people were pulsing toward the open tubes and the implicit, empty promise of escape, and away from the dead men and women walking out from them.
"Vomit zombies," Miller said.
"From the rad shelters," Holden said.
"The thing, the organism, it goes faster in radiation, right? That's why what's-her-name was so freaky about the lights and the vac suit."
"Her name's Julie. And yeah, those incubators were for this.
Right here," Miller said and sighed.
He thought about standing up.
"Well, we may not die of radiation poisoning after all."
"Why not just pump that shit into the air?"
Holden asked.
"Anaerobic, remember?" Miller said. "Too much oxygen kills him."
The vomit-covered emergency medicine guy was still trying to treat the shambling zombies like they were patients, like they were still humans. There were smears of the brown goo on people's clothes, on the walls. The tube doors opened again, and Miller saw half a dozen people dodge into a tube car coated in brown. The mob churned, unsure what to do. The group mind stretched past its breaking point. A riot cop jumped forward and started spraying down the zombies with gunfire. The entrance and exit wounds spilled out fine loops of black filament, and the zombies went down. Miller chuckled even before he knew what was funny. Holden looked at him.
"They didn't know," Miller said.
"The bully boys in riot gear? They aren't gonna get pulled out. Meat for the machine, just like the rest of us."
Holden made a small, approving sound. Miller nodded, but something was niggling at the back of his mind. The thugs from Ceres and their stolen armor were being sacrificed. That didn't mean everyone was. He leaned forward. The archway leading to the port was still manned. Mercenary fighters in formation, guns at the ready. If anything, they looked more disciplined now than they had before. Miller watched as the guy in the back with extra insignia on his armor barked into a mic. Miller had thought hope was dead. He'd thought all his chances had been played, and then, like a bitch, it all hauled itself up out of the grave.
"Get up," Miller said.
"What?"
"Get up. They're going to pull back."
"Who?"
Miller nodded at the mercenaries.
"They knew," he said. "Look at them. They aren't freaking out. They aren't confused. They were waiting for this."
"And you think that means they'll fall back?"
"They aren't going to be hanging out. Stand up."
Almost as if he'd been giving the order to himself, Miller groaned and creaked to his feet. His knees and spine ached badly. The click in his lung was getting worse. His belly made a soft, complicated noise that would have been concerning under different circumstances. As soon as he started moving, he could feel how far the damage had gone. His skin not yet in pain, but in the soft presentiment of it.
like the gap between a serious burn and the blisters that followed. If he